This is Drive
with Pia Wursu on ABC Northern Tasmania.
You're listening to Deep Dive on ABC Northern Tasmania. I'm Pia Wursu, and we're taking an in-depth look at mental health. And right off the bat, if you need support, make sure you get it. You can start by calling Lifeline on 13 11 14. You can also call Beyond Blue on 1300 224 636. Yesterday, you heard about the chronic shortage of mental health specialists in Tasmania.
The wait list to see a psychologist, I think, is about at least 4 weeks. And if you are not doing well right now, then that's not good enough.
Certainly when you look at the national averages compared to Tasmania, no. When you look at the service mapping that's been done in Tasmania against a national service mapping framework, no, we don't.
If you missed that, you can listen back online. The shortage is undermining people seeking care and placing a huge amount of pressure on those working in the sector. Olivia Bohr, clinical psychologist and chair of the Tasmanian branch of the Australian Psychological Society.
Mental health professionals are so invested in their clients and for their clients getting good outcomes, and everyone is working really, really hard and really wants to do a good job, but the risk of burnout for mental health professionals is huge because they're under pressure to see more people and to reduce how much they're charging for sessions, and you know, those things that we know, you know, support balance and longevity in the profession as well. So we're working really hard to provide services, but we also need to be working really hard to make sure our service providers don't get burnt out and continue to, as best they can, meet the need over time too.
Tara Bufton, a mental health advocate who has bipolar, says the people working in the sector are worth their weight, but there's simply not enough of them.
I feel very lucky to have had access to some of the services that I've had access to. I definitely think that we have got a lot of really fantastic people working in the mental health space.
So we have an understaffed and under-resourced workforce that's negatively affecting those working in and accessing the sector. So it's time to talk solutions. There are a few ideas that come up to address this problem. To start with, can we simply recruit more mental health professionals to Tasmania?
I think one thing that we need to be looking at very carefully in Tasmania is who we're recruiting Tasmania. So again, COVID has certainly proved that Tasmania is a very, very nice place to be. And all of a sudden, everyone's coming to Tasmania because it's a cool place to be.
Mai Franson, provisional psychologist and health behaviour change consultant.
I think one of the ways we can sort of recruit and retain not only clinicians for physical health but mental health is the way that we advertise Tasmania. So I think, unfortunately, a lot of money is spent on locum, so plugging the holes, if you like, of a health system that's got leaky bits. And so rather than, you know, spending a lot of money on someone coming down for 3 months to do that, what we should be spending our money on is advertising for people to come to Tasmania to stay and advertising the great things we have. And we should be recruiting people who want to set roots down in Tasmania and stay here. I think that's how you plug the holes and how you start to sort of ensure that we have a consistent physical and mental health task force to cope with the demands that are obviously continuing.
Tara Bufton says one of the challenges in recruiting and retaining professionals in Tasmania is the pay.
At the moment, it's mostly locums, and they've got a huge pay, and people who come here to be psychiatrists and work in the adult mental health centre long term, their pay is not as good. And so that's sort of the wrong way around. It should be the people who are coming here and only staying for a short time who have less incentive. It should that the pay incentive should be given to the psychiatrists who are going to come and stay, because it's actually psychiatrists consistently being here. And if you develop a relationship, you develop trust, you've told your story, they start to make progress with you, and then they're gone if they're a locum. And then you have to do it all over again.
Olivia Bohr says recruitment itself is a challenge, though, with mental health professionals less likely to work in regional areas.
You know, if we're talking about working in Tasmania, we know that because a lot of Tasmania is regional-based areas, that clinicians across all areas of health and allied health are far less likely to work in regional areas than they are to work in urban areas. Even if we could recruit people from the mainland, it's still unlikely to be able to fill that gap. And the mainland has just as many shortages as we do here a lot of the time.
Right, so if we can't rely simply on recruiting more workers, what then?
With that, I think we need to really start considering where there might be some innovation or some new approaches to our workforce as well.
That was Connie DeGolis, CEO of the Mental Health Council of Tasmania. One innovation Olivia Bohr thinks might work is a model that's actually used elsewhere in the health system.
Some of the other allied health professions are using allied health assistants to help with delivery of some services. So allied health assistants are used more frequently on the mainland in general, but in allied health disciplines such as physio or occupational therapy or speech and language pathology. And the allied health assistants can assist with managing some of that service delivery by, they're certainly operating under the supervision and guidance of the registered health professionals or allied health professionals, but they're delivering kind of structured programs.
To make this work, Ms. Bohr says there would need to be understanding of the attitude-based barriers and the resources that would be needed to support this kind of solution, and then how these allied health assistants would be trained.
When you look at the current training programs for allied health assistants, there's no face-to-face providers in Tasmania. You can do it online, but then when you look at the elective areas for developing discipline-specific specialised skills, there's none that are linked to mental health or to psychological services as well. So it would be a matter of understanding what some of those barriers are, developing a framework and resources and making it something that is achievable and easy for a population of psychologists who are largely sole traders to be able to start using as well. I've talked to the University of Tasmania about the potential of starting to develop some training in this space, and I'm talking to a few other services who have a vested interest in primary health workforce in Tasmania and allied health workforces in Tasmania to see if something can start getting put in place.
One approach the Mental Health Council is keen to see more of is the use of peer workers.
2 years ago, we launched our peer workforce development strategy. We would love to see that more front and centre and to really look at the opportunities that we could actually build in regards to increasing peers and peer workers in a whole range of environments for mental health supports. And we have a lot of examples internationally and nationally where that is working very well. And it's time for us to really look at those other options as well as some of those more traditional ones as well.
So what is a peer worker exactly?
What we do is we are there to work with our clients. In other words, we draw from our lived experiences to help them in their recovery journey.
That's Denise, a mental health peer practitioner.
Which basically means, you know, we can help them with all the issues that we've experienced ourselves, like with the mental health system, all the good and the bad and the ugly. And, you know, we can use our experiences of how we drew from our strengths and our tools that we learnt along the way and how to get through to the other side, basically. So we sort of come at it as a really safe place for them to talk about their story and their trauma and just being able to really open up with someone that's walked in their shoes, you know, someone who finally gets them and where they're coming from.
And peer workers work both with people experiencing mental health challenges and with carers. Jen is a family and friend peer partner.
So I work alongside the families, loved ones, neighbours, because the demographic of what a carer looks like is now growing and expanding due to the dynamics in families. And it could be just, you know, self-identifying as a family and friends or a carer is the first step. And again, it's in that partnership, and it's just that validation that they're not alone, removing some isolation and just it, working through them through the stages of their loved one being diagnosed. Also allowing that safe space for them to vent without a clinical judgment call or a society judgment call. So removing some of that stigma for the families.
People working as peer practitioners have, as Jen put it, been to the school of hard knocks.
Nothing like true grit lived experience and sharing that lived experience with others along the way. But we've also done the certificate for in mental health peer work and carers work as well. So we've done that training.
A certificate 4 in mental health peer work takes on average 8 months to complete, which means peer workers can be trained much more quickly to supplement the mental health workforce rather than, say, the 6 to 8 year training pathway for something like psychology. I'm Pia Wursu on ABC Northern Tasmania, and you're listening to Deep Dive. If this is raising any concerns for you, if you do need support, make sure you reach out for it. You can call Lifeline on 13 11 14 or Beyond Blue on 1300 224 636. Today, you're hearing about some of the alternatives that can help ease the burden on a mental health system that's struggling with too few mental health specialists for the demand. You've heard some of the solutions, recruiting more people, making Tasmania an attractive place to work. And you're also hearing about the role peer workers can play. But both Jen and Denise say peer workers don't just add bodies to a workforce. They also offer something unique because they have that lived experience.
I think it goes back to the client knowing that we're hearing them in a very different way because of that lived experience that we have. The fact that we really have walked in those shoes before.
Denise here.
There's no power struggle in that relationship.
It was also really interesting to hear from Jen and Denise about the way they, as people with lived experience working in the sector, reframed the language and focus around mental health.
Something that I love about sort of the philosophy around peer work that we have is that our role's not to look for what's wrong with you, but rather what's happened to you, which is a real reversal in how people have often found clinicians to maybe assess them and treat them.
And having those voices of people with lived experience in the workforce, in decisions and planning, can change the system to make it work better for those accessing support.
I think it's about being really, really active, activists really, to get in there and to advocate for clients and for the development of the peer worker program. Yeah, we'd love to have some more funding come through so we can get some more peer workers on the ground. The importance of this role is just fundamentally fantastic and what we can do and achieve.
It's just about seeing opportunities for peer workforce to develop and grow.
This is Jen.
It's a consumer-led revolution, really, that we're creating our own wellness and wellbeing.
You heard earlier in the week about the importance of social supports, and this is another way we can work to improve someone's mental health that doesn't rely on specialists.
We're looking at some work which is called social prescribing. So we can actually look at saying not just what do we prescribe as far as, say, physical exercise, rehabilitation, pharmaceutical scripts at the pharmacy to fill, but what else could we do?
John Kerwin, CEO of the Royal Flying Doctors Service.
The example I would give is, okay, someone, the partner has died and they're at a loss. What do they do? That was their social structure. The children may well be on the mainland, which is what we do see a fair bit of. How can we bring them back into the community? So how do we map through social prescribing what the other support systems are? And I have to say, it's one of the things I just love Tasmania and Tasmanians for, because they will put out a welcoming hand.
Denise agrees that people need that connectivity.
I think connectivity is key to people getting well and to working towards recovery. Connection with their family and friends and loved ones. Sometimes, you know, they need that support and help to get that reconnection and to repair some of those damaged relationships. Because I think it's just a really primal thing as humans to, you know, to have that connection with the community and, you know, with our people around us. And that goes towards, you know, having a real sense of belonging again and happiness and security.
In the more immediate term, while the shortage is addressed, Connie DeGolis from the Mental Health Council of Tasmania says there are other things that can be done. And one thing COVID-19 has given us is more access to telehealth services. Olivia Bohr.
Telehealth isn't appropriate for every single presentation, but we certainly learned through COVID as a profession that there is a lot of psychological services that can be delivered via telehealth.
During COVID-19, the federal government extended Medicare to cover telehealth mental health consultations, offering a window to another way to ease the pressure of a groaning, overburdened mental health system.
There certainly are providers on the mainland whose books are not closed, or they're still taking on new clients. So making sure that people have access to be able to choose that as a pathway if that's something that works better for them.
To finish, I know you've heard a lot about the challenges for the mental health system in this deep dive, but one way you can help is actually to go and get help if you need it. Connie DeGolis.
So I think one of the biggest challenges that we certainly have raised over a number of years has been the risk in people almost doing a watch and wait, and that people find themselves at a point where they are in some cases unnecessarily unwell before they're actually able to seek that support.
You've been listening to Deep Dive. All this week, we've been taking an in-depth look at mental health. If you'd like to listen back to any of the topics we've covered, you can do that online at abc.net.au/NorthTas. And as always, if you need support, it is there. Reach out. You can start with Lifeline on 13 11 14.